We now want to welcome to the program the Superintendent of Financial Services for New York State, Regulator Benjamin Losky. The largest bank in France, BNP Paribas, has now agreed to an $8.9 billion penalty, essentially pleading guilty for doing business with countries like Sudan and Iran, nations blacklisted by the United States. Mr. Losky is one of the lead architects of the case against BNP Paribas. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
A couple of things. If this $8.9 billion penalty goes through, would that be a record for these kinds of crimes?
I believe it's the largest case in the sanctions area, yes. So we have a whole series of cases that have happened over the last 10 years related to sanctions violations by certain banks, and this would be the largest.
So there would be larger penalties that might have to do with tax sheltering, but in terms of violating international sanctions, this is definitely right at the top.
Yes, no question. There have been larger penalties, for example, in the mortgage area, but for sanctions cases, this is right at the top.
And what would you say in terms of the strategy here? Is this taking a hardline approach against Paribas? Is this a different prosecutorial strategy?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, day after the Monday morning quarterbacking we're seeing now, some people are saying it's still not enough punishment. Other people are saying it's too harsh. So I think that when you get criticism from both sides, it might mean that you're starting to get it about right, a little bit like the Three Bears. I think that the focus has to be on, are we adequately deterring future bad conduct? What we want ultimately when we step back from these cases is a safer, a better, a fairer financial system and banking system. And when banks and the people that work at banks start to realize that if they take certain conduct that is inappropriate, illegal, et cetera, that there are going to be real substantial consequences and the kinds of consequences that cause people to change their behavior, I think that's when we start moving towards a better system. Are we there yet? I don't think so, but I think that's where we're trying to move.
Although you mentioned deterrence, that plays right into the issue that's been discussed in the financial press, on TV, and the FT and the Wall Street Journal. You know, when you talk about deterrence, you also talk about making an example of a particular institution. So if you're harsher on them, the deterrence that you get coming down the line means that, maybe you are jiggling the penalty a little bit to get the deterrence effect and not being across the board fair in a strictly judicial sense. How do you resolve that?
Yeah, it's hard. And I think you have to find a balance whenever you're looking at what types of penalties to impose. And I think when you have a case and then another case and another case, but you continue to see the bad conduct happening in many banks, I think it can cause a regulator or a prosecutor to say, maybe we're not getting this right and we're not taking the kinds of actions, whether it's actions that are the penalties are serious enough or large enough or whether they're the right type of penalties. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. You can often penalize a bank with a huge dollar figure that they have to pay. But for a bank, that's often just something that can be a cost of doing business, and they can pass it on to their shareholders.
And it's not like in this case any Sudanese villager is going to benefit from these particular penalties, right?
Right. And I think what we need to do is step back, and when we look at these cases and we look at all the banking misconduct cases we have around the system, when you step back, a bank, a corporation is a legal fiction. It's just a group of people. And a bank itself doesn't commit misconduct. It's not a sentient being. People in the bank commit misconduct. And I think we need to step back and say, how do we cause people inside those banks to change their conduct? Banks don't commit misconduct. Bankers do. And I think there, just a huge dollar penalty may at some point not have all that much impact. I think it's an important component of finding the right mix of penalties. But we also need to have real consequences for the people, the individuals who engage in the bad conduct. In this case, there were about – we pushed very hard at our agency for the bank to hold people accountable. Many of them are overseas, so we don't have jurisdiction. But in our negotiations, we did basically tell the bank that there was a whole group of people that had to be terminated and had their reputations really sullied. And that's hard to do. You have to be sure that you have the facts because you are talking about affecting an individual's career. But here the COO was ousted. A couple other chief compliance people were also ousted. We named them in our press release, so we weren't shy about that. And again, you don't love doing that, but I think as we try to get this mix right and we want to send the message out to the world that if you commit this misconduct as an individual, it's going to impact you, your career, your livelihood, how much money you make, et cetera, I think that can really have an additional impact. It may even have more impact than some enormous fine.
All right, I'm going to give you the rest of the time here in this segment, but because you said that, I want to sort of push this out a little bit. I mean, let's talk about the 2009. And this isn't necessarily your expertise, and this is, you know, a sensitive area for you personally. But as a regulator, since I have you right here in the studio, mm-hmm. you know, a bank is a bunch of people that do things. You know, that's what you just said. If that is the case, how come no bankers went to jail for what happened in 2009? Because a lot of Americans sitting out there listening to you say that go, well, hey, wait a minute. We're hearing every day that money equals speech in, you know, Citizens United, that corporations are people, you know, in the presidential campaign, but yet nobody actually is behind bars from something like the financial meltdown. I know you politically have different views than other people in the SEC, but what do you think about that?
Yeah, well, let me step back first and say, you know, whatever I do think about it, where I work at the Department of Financial Services, we're a regulator. We actually don't have grand jury or indictment
right.
authority, so there's
right.
sort of nothing we
yeah,
can
yeah.
do about it.
You're not.
But stepping back from it more broadly, personally, I think it is I get it. It's very frustrating. It's hard to understand how it is that we got in this situation. And I think part of it is a question of resources. I think if you devote enough prosecutorial resources, and I am a former prosecutor in another life. If you devote enough prosecutorial resources, let's say like they did in Enron, after the Enron meltdown, there was a huge Enron task force created, hundreds of FBI agents, prosecutors from all of the country, over the country, brought down the best and the brightest of the prosecutors, brought down to Texas to really focus on what happened at Enron. And they brought a whole series of serious criminal cases. We did not do that after the financial crisis in the same way.
And that's the lesson.
It's a big question out there.
Benjamin Losky, Superintendent of Financial Services for the State of New York. Thanks so much for your candor.
Thank you for having me.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.